National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History 2. This is Celessa Burke interviewing Alan Zitnik. Tape 2, Side 1. Today we're going to review some of the things that we talked about last time, and we came up with some questions that we hope you can answer for us. We had finished, you were talking about your stint in the Army, and we wondered if there were some experiences during that tour of duty that you don't mind mentioning to us.
Well, I entered the Army in October of 1952, and I took my basic training at Camp Pickett, Virginia. I went through a medical corps training on getting out of basic training. I was sent to Fort Devens, Massachusetts, where I worked in a medical processing center for induction and separation from the service. After about 8 or 9 months there, I was transferred to Fort Dix, New Jersey. By this time, I had attained some rank, and I was line commissioned officer in charge of the facility for induction and separation from the service at Fort Dix, New Jersey. From there I came up. Never got over 350 miles from Pittsburgh.
So you consider that a good experience then?
Well,
safe.
It was like going to a job, basically, other than basic training. Medical Corps. We inducted in any given morning any place from 350 to 500 people. In the afternoons, we separated from the service about 300 to 400 people. That included officers and enlisted men. You couldn't get in or out of the Army without going through our installation.
So that was primarily paperwork? You weren't interviewing?
No, it was face-to-face. I ran medical x-ray machines, shots, anything you would get on a physical examination.
So you were in contact with the person?
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't know whether you remember stink we had many years ago, but G. David Schein was there. In fact, we processed Rocky Graziano's brother through our installation. Anybody in the First Army area, which entailed New York, Massachusetts, had come through our installation.
Busy place.
Oh, yes. Half that base was devoted just to either our unit or holding companies for induction and separation from the military. If you came from overseas, you would still come through our installation. Nobody could process you out. See, they tried to process you out as close to home as they could. So when they would ship you in, they would ship you. There are six Army areas in the United States. We took care of the First Army area, which was the Eastern Seaboard. And if you were from California, they would probably process you out from the Sixth Army area, which is California.
I understand that. how did your being Jewish affect your experience there at that time in our history?
It didn't affect anything, really. You know, at that time, the army had gone through what we call today a colorblind situation. They did not have segregated units for blacks or things like that. In fact, one of the first things that was impressed on us when we were inducted was that there would be no fights over race, religions, things like that. It would be dealt with very severely. So really, you didn't have some of the things that you would find on the outside. But remember, it's a controlled environment in the army. And the punishments could be very severe. So you really didn't have too much anti-Semitism and things like that in the military.
At least that was exposed, which must have been a relief to a lot of people.
It may have been there. It wasn't on the surface. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there are many people that are inducted or are serving that are prejudiced, but you couldn't voice it. And you've got to remember that most of your non-commissioned officers in the Army, when I was there, were mostly Southern boys. And most of your prejudices usually came up from the South.
Now, explain to us why most of those boys were Southerners. How did that happen?
Because it seemed as if you read history back through the Civil War, the South always produced very good soldiers. You know, it was a big thing, the military in the South. It always has been. In fact, during the Civil War, if you read history, the best generals came out of the South. So it's carryover down there. But, right, most of our cadre were Southern boys.
Well, now to progress on to other things you spoke about were the people who have influenced you. And among those, you mentioned Rabbi Shapiro. We don't have a first name for him, if you can remember that.
I can't think of, you know, we only used Rabbi Shapiro. Never used the first. I don't know it.
And where was he affiliated?
Oh, Paul Zedek. He was the head rabbi of Paul Zedek for many, many years.
Do you remember what span of time that was?
Oh, sure. He probably started there in the 40s, early 40s. And he probably was there until the 70s or early 80s, even. He was there
so
quite
it was
long.
Like a lifetime commitment
yes.
for him to be the rabbi.
Yes. Actually, he was born British. And never forget, he always used to wear striped tuxedo trousers and what you would call a morning coat in. And it's a rounded in the back.
Like a frock coat?
Well, no. It is a British afternoon coat.
It was cut away.
If you look at your old movies, even in America, they used to wear them with a black piping on the edge. It was an afternoon outfit that you would see in early British history or even American history.
Did it include a hat or a yarmulke?
That was a very unusual in America, the outfit, and he always wore that every day.
And was he rabbi until retirement, or did he die as the rabbi?
I think he retired prior to passing away.
Another person you mentioned was Dr. Abrams. Do you know
Saul Abrams?
Saul.
Yes, I knew Saul very well. I worked with him for well over 30 years. Solomon Abrams was the director of the Hebrew Institute. His father founded the place.
What was his name?
First name, I don't remember. The Hebrew Institute was founded in the Hill District in the 30s. And it moved to Squirrel Hill and built a building probably in about the 40s. They were the main educational institute for children in the city of Pittsburgh, long before synagogues had cheders or schools of their own. In fact, the institute was instrumental in helping to set up half of the synagogue schools. They did teacher training, anything having to do with educating Jewish children in the ways of our forefathers. It was a well-respected institution, and it stayed in business up until about 7 years ago, when Federation felt that it needed a different type of reason for being in business.
Now, was this Dr. Abrams' main interest?
Oh, he spent day and night there. I mean, he was very, very dedicated to that institute. If you look back through your Pittsburgh history, you will find that the Hebrew Institute probably touched the lives of almost everybody in this community, in one way or another. some of our people that were taught Hebrew and things, they were taught at the Institute, whether they lived on the Hill District or in Squirrel Hill. And they had buses, and they bused them in from all over Allegheny County.
Was this a lifetime commitment for Dr. Abrams as well?
Oh,
yeah. He was there.
He was there all the time. Whether it was first thing in the morning or late at night, Dr. Abrams was there. Dr. Abrams is still alive. He's retired, and I believe he's in Arizona. Very committed man to Jewish education, exceptionally committed. You've got to remember, it took a commitment to build an institution like that, because building a school of any kind, you don't have a federal government that underwrites it or anything. You might get a little seed money from Federation or the community, but most of it is done through fundraising and commitment of the board of directors and things like that. I'm sure you ladies are associated with synagogues, and you see the way different funds are raised. And it's not easy, because once you get a building, and you've got upkeep, you've got to worry about salaries. And it is very expensive.
And that was his charge. He was committed to that.
He was totally committed to that.
Once again, tell us the location of the Hebrew Institute.
I believe it was on Bedford Avenue in the Hill District originally. Then when it came to Squirrel Hill, it established itself at Forbes and Denniston Street. And they bought a big house, and they tore it down and built a building. And the building still stands today. Today it was turned over to the Yeshiva Chaim Tamimim, I believe, for girls' school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very Orthodox type school.
The Hebrew Institute, was that, would you say that was a conservative organization?
Yes. They taught along conservative lines, but that your teaching, all teaching, I don't care what school you really go to, is taught Orthodox, whether people realize it or not. You cannot teach Reformed. There's no such thing. All teaching, whether it's community day school, they have to teach you to the maximum, which is mostly Orthodox. And then your leanings from there, I mean, what your family life is or what have you, is explained. In other words, this is the way the Orthodox would present this, and but your Reformed or your conservative is not incorrect. They just don't follow all of them.
But they didn't separate the children at all.
Neither does community day school.
No.
Now, when you mentioned community day school and the process of how it evolved, who were the people who were initially involved in those meetings?
Dr. Abrams, myself.
And if you can remember their first names as well as their last.
That's the hard
challenge.
Part. Solomon Abrams, Joanne Talenfeld, myself, that was the original nucleus right there.
And as this process began, was it cooperative? You had to involve other people and groups.
Well, certainly. First thing you had to do was to go to all the rabbis and tell them what you wanted to do and get their support, naturally, if you could. You had to try to establish a kindergarten, first grade. Couldn't do everything at once. So first thing that started out was a combination kindergarten, first grade. You had to educate parents so that you would get people to attend. And remember, people are very wary about committing their children to a new school, anything new. They figure, you know, after it's established, everybody beats the doors down to get in when they can't.
Mm-hmm. This began as the child's education. They had no public education if they chose to come here. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct. We gave them both the public education and the Hebrew education within the 8-hour day or 7.5, whatever it was.
So they had a full day.
A full day. And setting up a Jewish type school, again, you've got to worry about meeting certain criteria that are set by the state of Pennsylvania for education. Your accreditation can be in several different modes. In other words, you can be accredited religious, which takes absolutely nothing to be. I mean, if you want to run a strictly religious type school, you need very little in the way of education control from the state. They keep their hands off of it. All you got to do is say, we are an Orthodox religious school, and not hard. Then there are stages depending on which accreditation you wish. You take a school like Shadyside Academy, they're mid-Atlantic states, which is the highest accreditation process you can go through. Community day school is mid-Atlantic states.
Now.
And has been for many years. we got that accreditation in our fourth or fifth year, and it was not easy. Every year they send inspectors around to check your curricula, whether you're devoting enough hours to... They don't check your Hebrew curricula. Enough hours.
The secular.
The secular, definitely. And it's tough. I don't think that, like the Orthodox schools in this city here, have that accreditation. I believe they're religious schools. Because at the time that I was heavily involved, there were only about three or four schools in the city that had Mid-Atlantic States accreditation, and Community Day School was one of them.
And it took about 4 years until that was
easy. Oh, it was murder. They check everything from keeping the school clean to the educational process to going over your entire curricula. And what they do, they send in representatives of other schools as the inspectors.
So, of course, all of your teachers have to be certified teachers.
Absolutely.
In the state of Pennsylvania.
Yes, they're all certified.
Now, did you have community meetings?
Oh, yeah.
When you say you instructed the parents as to what
we had community meetings. We had planning meetings. We had meetings to set up curricula. And you've got to remember, we were a small nucleus. You were getting different people, educators on committees that had input, like in Hebrew, Eunice Baradon.
Eunice. Yeah. Would you spell that Baradon?
Baradon.
She was the Hebrew consultant.
Yes. She was also the head of the school at Beshul, Hebrew school. And she was also vice president of SAJS, vice principal. And we used her expertise for Hebrew. We had several people that gave us advice for secular and what we had to do.
Do you remember who they were?
That is hard, you know. I can visualize the faces, but, you know, it's too many years back.
Well, were these people from the Board of Education in Pittsburgh, or...
Oh, yes.
Or principals, or...
One was a principal of a school in the city of Pittsburgh. Some of them were teachers.
Were they Jewish?
Yes.
Or didn't it matter?
Didn't matter. Education is education.
Right, but I just...
most of them would have been Jewish. It was really, you know, it. You find when you set up anything, you're going to have a nucleus of four or five people that every day they have a meeting to get this group going. In the first 10 or 12 years of this community day school, we not only had meetings almost every night, different committees. You had four or five people, you had five committees, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's not kid ourselves, the same people. And I'm sure you both belong to organizations and you always see the same faces that are committed. And then you have certain people, they like their name on the letterhead. The ones that are committed, you know, they do a lot of work. I know I was at the school every day, in case there were problems.
Were there particular parents or community members who joined forces with you to enter in all these discussions?
Yes. The rabbis from Road of Shul were very, very supportive and gave us much help.
That was Rabbi Jacob?
Rabbi Jacob and the younger man there,
Mark Stateman.
Mark Stateman, correct. I will say one thing. Of all the rabbis in the city of Pittsburgh, they were the most supportive, they gave the most help, they were the most committed, and they did whatever was possible to help us. Which, I'll put this in a nice way. We've got to understand that the conservative rabbis within the city of Pittsburgh wanted to start their own school some 8 or 9 years before. And they didn't do it. And why they didn't do it was not that they didn't have the power to do it. You know, you get 4 or 5 of the biggest conservative rabbis in a city together, you know, they can move a lot of things. It didn't get started because everybody wanted to be the head cheese. That's what it amounted to. Everybody wanted to, you know, jockeying for position. He can't do that starting a school. So it didn't start. The only school, the Solomon Schechter School, started after ours. It was started by Beschel mostly. But it really wasn't any form of competition between their school and ours. I mean, they didn't have the accreditation. And parents today are smart enough to ask that question. You know, you find that a lot of the Jewish women were school teachers. A lot of the men were school teachers. You know, that meant a lot. You know, their school, I think, never progressed to anything. I'm sure it was a good school. I've never been in it or what have you, but it's just that they takes a lot of work to set a school up, an awful lot of work. I probably committed, over those 10 years, 50% of my waking day to either meetings, being at that school for problems, and we're not even talking about financing. I probably paid the salaries and rentals and everything for the first 32 or 33 years of that school out of my pocket.
Now, mentioning the financing, did Rodeb Shalom contribute financially when you say they were most supportive?
It wasn't financial we were looking for,
but
we were looking for support. You know, a rabbi that would get up in front of his congregation and say, we have a Jewish day school that's starting, and I wish you would just look into it. Mm-hmm. That's all we wanted.
Now, this was at the Hebrew Institute when you started, is that correct?
Yes, we rented. See, the Hebrew Institute, their classes started at 4 o'clock or 4:30, because they were an after-school type institution. In my day, we called them a cheder.
It was a religious school.
Yeah. And the regular school, we started at 8:30 and ran till about 3:30. So really, it was a good utilization of a building. It saved the community money from another institution opening another building. So instead of using a building for like 4 hours a day from 4 to 6 for Hebrew Institute and from 6 to 8 for SHAS, now you were using it from 8 to 8.
Now, did you ask the institutions of the Jewish community for financial support?
We went to the community. We did not ask the institutions as such for support. You know, every institution is raising money for themselves. I mean, we've got to be honest. All the money is coming from the laymen within this community. That's where the money comes from. every institution has their own mortgages, their own whatever, remodeling, or that they're still paying. I don't know any institution in the city that isn't raising money for something. So we went directly to the community. We ran fundraisers on our own with our own boards. We were very careful on what we purchased and everything. Fundraising was hard. I and the people I knew that were on the board were not professional fundraisers. I mean, that's a lot of the supplies that we pick up were done because somebody else would make a phone call to people we knew in the business and that send paper in and for a deduction or what, because they do business with people like me or somebody else. So a lot of the supplies that came in got donations that way.
So it sounds like this was a positive, cooperative effort.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
With drawbacks?
There's always...